This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Broadcasting live from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Chwaba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy still not convinced computers are here to stay, Pete Chwaba.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Kicking off hour number two of Nightlight with Pete Chwaba, broadcasting live statewide from beautiful downtown Green Bay on a gorgeous winter night. Great to have you with me. Bring the whole family in and gather around the radio, and let's stay warm and just have some laughs and talk about museums. And we've got a filmmaker coming at 7:20 to talk about her documentary that will make its world premiere at the Door County Film Festival. We haven't even talked about Oscar nominations yet because of these people in Mississippi trying to pass laws that will never be enforced. But right now, Greg Vadney is here. He made the popcorn pick of the week, and we kept him here a little longer, past his bedtime.
No problem.
Because we want to talk about really cool stuff. Greg is the executive director of the Rahr West Museum in Manitowoc. They are celebrating their 75th year, which is incredible. You said you've been there 13 years.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about what's happening in its 75th year.
So all year long, we're going to be doing celebrations of this 75 years. We have, for people who don't know, the museum encompasses a historic house, the Vilas Rahr Mansion. We've got multiple galleries that have been built off of the mansion. And we are also the spot, as you well know, of the crash landing in 1962 of the Sputnik 4 spacecraft. So there's a bunch of things that go on at the Rahr West. But the first kind of kickoff we're having is on Saturday, February 8th. It is an all-day open house event to, one, celebrate that we are into the 75th year, and then, two, we unveil brand-new exhibits in that historic mansion. So the historic mansion during the holidays is decked out for Christmas, right? We have our Christmas in the mansion. There are Christmas trees everywhere. So we shut that down early January. Then you got to clean up a bunch of pine needles and a bunch of like the ornaments and all that stuff, and then set up brand new exhibits. And all of the exhibits on the first and second floor of the mansion, we're talking about seven different rooms worth of exhibit areas, will all be tied together with this loose tie of our 75th anniversary.
Okay. It's a big undertaking, and it looks like, I mean, I was just looking through your website before, all the stuff you have lined up. So for the 8th, you've got a scavenger hunt.
Yes, all day long.
You've got a tour of the museum.
That I'm doing.
Oh, nice.
The tour is with me. So we have done so many hours of research on the history of our place. We were talking about Argo historical drama. I got some historical drama. Like through the years, things were iffy in a few years.
Really?
There was like a crumbling building. There were accusations of impropriety. There was stolen artwork through the years. We're going to talk a lot about those. I got so many nuggets of trivia. I can't wait to share.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
So that I'm going to be hosting beginning at 11:30 a.m. And we'll walk through the mansion and we'll talk about the history of this joint.
That sounds like a blast. Yeah. So the scavenger hunt, I would guess, is like mostly for kids or?
That's how we originally designed it. But I know a lot of adults who go crazy for it.
The same ones that want to go in the bounce house, probably.
Could be.
Yeah. We'll see.
Could be. I don't make any judgment.
Yeah.
Come on,
hey,
man.
You want to bounce? Bounce.
Yeah, you do your thing.
That's what it's there for. Just don't crash into the kids.
Exactly.
I love this. You have Art of Conversation with Laura Bickford at 1 p.m. Conversation, first of all, is an art.
Absolutely.
You have to listen. Then you talk. Like, whenever we would have these crazy conversations at our dinner table, I would always tell my wife and kids, whoa, conversation is an art. And they would get so sick of me saying that. I hope it stuck with them. But tell us what that is. That sounds like a lot of fun.
So, Laura Bickford is a curator at the John Michael Kohler Art Center down in Sheboygan. John Michael Kohler, if you've never been to their place, and we're both, John Michael Kohler and the Rar West are part of Wisconsin Art Destinations, which are a group of 13 different museums, art museums and art facilities around the state that all do collaborative advertising together. So I got to give them a plug.
Absolutely.
But John Michael Kohler, very dedicated to self-trained artists. And we happen to have an exhibit of a self-trained artist from Manitowoc by the name of Rudy Rotter that's up right now. The exhibit is called Essential Creativity. You don't have to wait until February 8th to see that exhibit. That exhibit is ongoing. And Rudy was self-trained. More so than, like, you think of a self-trained or an outsider artist as being somebody who does some, you know, just kind of stuff, weird stuff on the side. Rudy had, at one point in time, had a gallery that in New York that sold his artwork. He just happened to not do that as his major profession. He was a dentist in Manitowoc. Oh, wow. But he also, I mean, he was wildly creative and created a huge volume of artwork. Many of his art pieces, actually, he used kind of cast-offs from some of the foundries and the metal workshops in Manitowoc, and then created sculpture out of them.
I thought you were going to say made braces out of them, but okay.
I don't know. Maybe if they didn't work as a brace, as braces or some headgear for his patients.
Sure.
He was like, yeah, I could probably make a sculpture out of this thing. So we have that exhibit up, and Laura will be coming and talking about these self-trained artists throughout Wisconsin, and specifically about Rudy. We've got great exhibits, like I said, that are all interconnected about the history of the museum and the things that we have done in Manitowoc for the last 75 years. And then we also do a quick create, which is essentially a drop-in class where people will be able to create a mini accordion sketchbook with the help of some of our arts educators and use that. We're inviting them to go right out into the galleries and do some sketching on your own or come back later and you can do some sketching. And also, you know, we're going to be doing a toast. We're going to celebrate because it's a big year for us. And like I said, last segment, you know, we had a huge year in 2024. And to be able to walk into our 75th on this high note, we are pumped. We've got our usual slate of wonderful exhibits along with, I mean, at the end of the year, we're going to have a Keith Haring exhibit, which is really swinging for the fences for us. And then things that we do every year, like Sputnik Fest, are going to take on a little bit of a different twinge during this year. With it being the 75th anniversary, we're going to be talking probably a little bit more about that historic fact that happened at the Rar West in 1962.
Let me ask you, my guest is Greg Vadney. He is the executive director of the Rar West Museum in Manitowoc, joining me here in studio on Nightlight tonight. Oh, you have a Georgia O'Keeffe, which is 100 years old. How do you get stuff like that in a museum? Is there competition? Like, do you get into bidding wars, or is it
there
just
can be? I mean, for the quick answer is the reason why there's the name West in our museum is not for direction. It was a person, and that was Ruth West primarily. Ruth and John West were great supporters of us. They owned the Manitowoc Company, which was Crane Company. It was a shipbuilding company before that, and Ruth West in particular had a great fondness for artwork. She was very involved in the museum during her life, and she, in her last year, purchased that George O'Keeffe painting, Birch and Pine Tree Number 2, which is celebrating its 100th year this year. That painting has had two owners. The people of Manitowoc, as I said.
Yeah, that's cool.
And before that, George O'Keeffe. Bought that from the O'Keeffe estate after George O'Keeffe passed away. George O'Keeffe had it at her home.
And that is really cool. Birch and Pine Tree 2.
Super story. And we're going to be talking about that because what a great other milestone with that celebrating 100 years. I don't know whether you call it a birthday for a painting. I know I'm the art museum guy. I should know. Is it a birthday? Is it an anniversary? What do you call it? I'm calling it a birthday.
Are kids in Manitowoc encouraged or schools to bring kids and expose them to museums?
Absolutely.
And all that? Okay.
Absolutely. And one of the major things we talk about is, like, you know, a lot of times you go to a larger museum and it's a very hands-off place. It's like, you can't get close to the art. You've got a security guard wandering around behind you. One of the things that we stress, and part of it is just because we're tiny, we don't have enough staff to be able to follow you around. But even if we did, I don't think we would do that because I'm a big believer that you have to have intimate moments with the artwork.
Yeah.
You got to be physically with that art And you got to have it be unencumbered by other people to be able to actually appreciate it, get into it, get near it, and absorb it. And one of the things we do with all of our art classes, whether they're adult art classes or young people art classes, is part of our art class is usually that exposure. You're either going into the exhibit for a period of time to look at what the masters had done, or we'll bring the artwork right into the classroom and show them.
That's really cool.
One of the coolest things about being able to do arts education in a place where you have a collection that is, like I said, one of the best in the state.
Absolutely. All right, we've got about 2 or 3 minutes left, Greg, so let's get my favorite thing. This is one of the coolest things I learned about Wisconsin since I've been back here, and I didn't know about it until I hosted this show, was Sputnik and what happened. I mean, talk about a serendipitous, like your location and the facility you have, and then with West and the art they brought. Yeah. And then, oh, you got this Russian satellite that happened to fall to the earth right in the intersection in front of your museum.
God, it's great.
It's crazy.
It's great. It nearly landed in the museum.
Yeah.
And the museum was a museum. That's part of our history, right? The museum had been around for 12 years at that point. That's 62.
Okay.
We're just
62.
Like settling in at that museum, and bam. Early morning hours, this thing crash lands.
Yeah, for people that haven't, that don't know the story, tell them, because I just learned about
Quick hit story.
All right,
1960, Sputnik 4 is sent up. This is not the original, like, ball with the antenna coming off.
Yeah.
This is a few iterations after that. It's sent up, 1960. Almost immediately, the Russians lose control of the spacecraft. So it ends up being in an orbit. And it's just a natural orbit for 2 years. And then it starts to fall. Now, U.S. government, Russian government, and even some amateur astronomers know that it's going to fall. But the people of Manitowoc don't know about it. Right. Nobody told us. And they knew it would fall somewhere in the Midwest. But you can't really pinpoint something like that.
Yeah.
It's a free fall. It's a natural descent out of through the atmosphere.
Yeah.
So most of the ship burned up. It wasn't that big to begin with. And the largest recovered piece was found in the street directly in front of the museum by two police officers the morning of September the 5th, 1962. So
was it like literally smoking or?
It was. Jeez. That's the deal.
And you have a really unassuming little monument to it. Like I was it expecting is. The shrine. No, it's
hey
a
man,
little
if
steel
I
ring
can,
in the street.
If I can, I'll redo that and we'll do something
I think it's
huge.
Spectacular.
Honestly, I'd love to have like some sort of a catwalk over the top of it. Because so many people run out in the street to take selfies.
Oh, right.
It's kind of a danger because the thing's dead center in the middle of North 8th Street in Manitowoc.
It's a great thing.
It's just another unbelievable element of our 75-year history at the RAR West. And we're going to be celebrating it all year long. If I can give a plug, our website is rarwestartmuseum.org. You'll find out about Sputnik, about our 75-year history, and about everything that's going on.
You got to check it out. It's well worth the trip. Greg, thank you so much for making the pick and sharing all this information with us.
It's always a pleasure.
All right, Greg Vadney. We'll be right back with Kate Stapleton, documentary filmmaker.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Just like Greg was here and I'm talking to him and I'm like, oh, I don't even need my glasses. Maybe my eyes are getting better. And then he leaves, and I look at my questions for Kate. I'm like, God, I need my glasses. It's dark. It's very simple. I have the lights off in the studio, and that makes it harder to see. And you just made it worse. That's all right, though. Hey, welcome back. This is Nightlight. We are barreling through hour number two here on a Thursday night, the Christmas Eve of weeknights. You think that's going to catch on?
I don't know. Maybe.
Never know. We gotta be known for something other than tomfoolery every night. And you know, this new law in Mississippi, I feel like we had some fun with it, but now, you know, then there's a minor in the studio with his dad, and now we've got a very distinguished filmmaker on. So I feel like I can't make those kind of jokes. So tomorrow, you have to remind me tomorrow, Conrad.
Okay.
All right. Hey, this is fun. We have a filmmaker about to join us here on the show. She has a film she made called The Inner Sea, and it premieres, worldwide premiere, at the Door County Film Festival, I want to say mid-February. I think February 13th, if I remember correctly, or the 15th, maybe. But she joins us now on the stream all the way from beautiful Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Kate Stapleton. Kate, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. And how are things in Pittsburgh tonight?
It's great. It's winter. We are having a real winter. It's like we stole it from Wisconsin. We have all the snow. It's here.
Really?
It's been snowy nonstop for the whole past month and a half, pretty much. So I'm happy as a Wisconsinite. I feel sort of rejuvenated by having constant snow and sub-zero temperatures. I don't know how everyone else feels. There's ice on the rivers, so it's great. It's a beautiful time to be in Pittsburgh.
I would send you the rest of the winter if I could. I just don't have that power here, but I'm glad you're enjoying it. Tell us about your native Wisconsinite. Where did you grow up here?
I grew up near La Crosse, so up on the ridge in Dairy Country, so Middle Ridge specifically. It's got, you know, a church and a bar and a couple houses and dairy farms. So real Wisconsin, classic Wisconsin spot.
Got all the bases covered. Church, bar, and dairy farms. What more do you need in life, really?
That's really it. I mean, we'd walk up and get milk from the bulk tank and, you know, walk home, stop at the church, stop at the bar at night. Not when we were kids, but.
Well, maybe when you were kids. It is Wisconsin. You never know.
That was where the pop machine was. So, yeah, we had to go to the bar for the pop machine.
And now I know you're from Wisconsin for sure because you said pop machine. You called it pop. And which, you know what? Even in Wisconsin, you don't hear pop as much anymore. I made the transition. I called it soda or started to about 30 years ago because I was hearing pop less and less. So it was kind of refreshing to hear you say pop.
Yeah, I think that when at least when I think about my childhood, I wouldn't call it anything other than a pop machine.
Kate is like, I'm talking about pop and I want to talk about my film. Hey, let's jump into that. You made this really cool documentary. It's going to premiere February 15th at the Northern Skies Gould Theater in Fish Creek, February 15th.
Yes.
It's such a great theater. Tell us about the movie and give us a background of what the movie's about first.
So the movie, it's a documentary. It's a music documentary. It's got stories. It's kind of a deconstructed modern Sound of Music, I guess. You've got a lot of children. There's traveling musicians. There's a giant 40-foot long bright blue school bus. And it's a love story, but it's a love story about music and about adoption. So that's kind of the general pitch for it.
All right. And it was interesting. I watched a big part of the movie earlier today. Talk about the adoption angle. That fascinated me because that's kind of how the movie starts off, is you talking about a baby you gave up for adoption without giving too much of the movie away. What was that like going through that?
Yeah, I mean, I placed a child for adoption when I was 21. And that's a huge part about what the movie is about. I don't know if there are any other movies. As far as I've seen, there aren't any other movies made by women who have made that decision. I think you don't tend to make that decision unless you are really, you don't have a lot of power, you don't have economic power, you're lacking something, you're lacking education, you're lacking resources. And it's a decision that has a lot of shame connected to it. So for me to talk about my story, but within the context of the life I have now, I'm a touring musician. I have six children. My husband and I have six children together. Yeah. So the adoption has always been an open adoption. And so I've always had a relationship with the family who raised my daughter. She grew up in California, so long way from Wisconsin.
Yeah.
But she ended up coming to college near where I live now in Pittsburgh. And she is also a musician. So when I started to look at telling this story, I wanted to approach it from the music angle as well, kind of weaving the story together with music, because that's so much a part of our life and it's always been a part of our connection. And it's really special for us to premiere the movie on the coast of Lake Michigan, because the movie kind of begins with me, you know, talking about my experience of being 21 years old and not having an idea what was going to happen over the rest of my lifetime and not being able to imagine that. And I thought about that every night. I was staying with my grandmother in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. So I was right along the coast of Lake Michigan, and And the story for me really starts standing on the edge of Lake Michigan, wondering what's going to happen. So being able to come back to that same stretch, that same coastline of Lake Michigan, and to continue this story by premiering the film there is just, I couldn't imagine a better place for it.
I'm going to tell you something that really stuck with me while I was watching this. And it's kind of a compliment to you as someone who was pregnant and did everything they could to make sure that this baby developed over the 9 months. And you played music a lot and talked to it or her as it ended up being. But you also...
I didn't know. So I was like the baby. I didn't know whether it was a girl or a boy. Yeah. So.
But the care you took to make sure you had a healthy pregnancy and that the baby developed, knowing you were going to give it away for adoption anyway, somehow was duplicitous almost. I felt like, oh my God, that's so emotionally crazy. I don't know how you could have gotten through that. It's like an added layer of drama for something you really did. It was very impressive and a great element of the movie.
I think I talk a lot about, playing music, playing music was a big part of, it was really connected to my adoption decision. I had this little harp that I'd gotten in high school, but I wasn't really playing it until I got pregnant. And when I was pregnant, I had this huge decision to make. You know, I was kind of in between. My relationship had just fallen apart and I didn't have a job. I was going to go do mission work actually, but jeez. I was trying to figure out what to do. But I started to play the harp at the same time I was contemplating adoption.
Hey, Kate, let's pick up right there with you playing the harp and then let's jump back into this after the news. Okay.
Absolutely.
I don't want to miss any of this. So, all right. Kate Stapleton is here. We're talking about her film, The Inner Sea. I'll tell you more about that after the news. This is Pete Schwab and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
There's a problem with feathers, iron, bargain buildings, weights and pulleys.
Tomorrow night on Nightlight, we will have from the Doctors in Recital, Kim Shefchik. She will not be here live this time, but she has supplied us with some great music. And they have a big concert coming up this weekend. Kim will talk about that, and it's for a great cause. It's also a bar band Friday night, so Terry Barr will be here with new music and sparkling conversation. Hey, helping us light it up here at Nightlight every night now is the Appleton Cigar Company. What better company to help us light it up than a cigar company? They're on College Avenue. They've been serving the community for over 25 years. If you are a cigar aficionado or a first-timer even, and you're looking for one-of-a-kind experience, you need to check out Appleton Cigar. They boast the largest selection of cigars north of Milwaukee with over 700 cigars to choose from and a walk-in humidor. The Cigar Lounge offers an impressive variety of spirits and cocktails that pair perfectly with a premium cigar. See, I wouldn't know what goes with what, so you really should stop by. Ask Norm for his help. He's a great guy. He's got a great staff. For the full experience, go to the Appleton Cigar Company. They are open every day from 11:30 a.m. to 10:30 p.m., Monday through Saturday. And for more information, go to appletoncigar.com. Right now, pardon me, we are talking documentary film, and my guest is Kate Stapleton. She made a film called The Inner Sea. It makes its worldwide premiere in Door County in just a couple of weeks at the Northern Sky Theater on February 15th. She is joining us on the stream from beautiful Pittsburgh. Kate, a native Wisconsinite, you were talking about playing the harp, and I was saying how impressed I was that you were doing it and taking such good care of this baby that was developing inside you, even though you knew you were giving it away for adoption. It was a very emotional kind of element to your film, I thought.
Yeah, it's a very emotional element to the story. And I think it gets lost a lot when the conversation happens about adoption. You can't be pregnant for 9 months without it profoundly changing you. You become a mother. And, you know, when you become a mother, you fall in love with your child. So that's a part of the story for women who have undergone this. And I think it's a part that often gets left out. Yeah. It's complicated, and sure, it's complicated to dive into it, but I think it's something that's important to include in that conversation.
Did you have moments throughout the pregnancy where you second-guessed yourself or you thought, I don't want to give this baby up, as it turns out?
I definitely went into it. I had no interest whatsoever in adoption when I was first pregnant. I think it was a decision that I came to in part with the father, with the birth father. You know, we were young. We knew we weren't going to be together, and it was really important for us to find two people who could love this child and love each other and support each other and create, you know, a stability that we couldn't provide at that time. I felt really confident that it was the right decision for my child. You know, I knew that it was going to be really hard for me, but I felt like in that moment as a mother, not being a mother was the most powerful thing that I could do.
Wow. That's interesting. All right, let me ask you this now, Kim. It's all done now. Pre-production, shooting, post-production, you're in a festival. When did you realize you wanted to make a movie about this? Because this must have come years later. You said you have six kids now. You guys are all traveling around in this huge bus. You're touring musicians. When did you get the idea to make this into a film, your story?
I still question whether I wanted to make a movie about this sometimes, but I think my husband's a teacher. He's a high school teacher during the year, so he deals with teenagers all the time, and he turned to me actually, you know, during the years where my daughter, who I placed for adoption, was starting to spend a lot more time with us and play music, and he turned to me and said, "I think that this is a story that you need to tell. I think that you should tell this story." So he actually scored the film as well. You know, he's in the film, and I ended up taking the lead and producing it and directing it. But he was the one who really challenged me to do this film. It was his idea, not mine. Yeah. Originally.
When did you reconnect with your daughter that you gave up for adoption? How old was she?
We've always had an open adoption. So I visited them for the first time when, she was 4 years old.
Oh, wow.
And, they came, you know, we went back and forth a few times. They were at my wedding. We danced together at my wedding. I mean, I danced with my daughter at my wedding. Her whole family was there.
Wow.
And we would visit, every few years really, but it wasn't until she came to college that we started to spend more time together. So it was, you know, when she was about 18 years old. And she has an amazing relationship with her family. I mean, she's got an incredible family.
You guys look so much alike. I remember I got distracted while I was watching it, and I took a phone call, and I came back, and I was like, oh, this must be archival footage of you playing the guitar. And then I backed it up, and I'm like, oh, that's your daughter. Oh my God. So you definitely see the resemblance there. Can you talk a little bit about, you guys are both musicians, and I like how you describe that you, it's interesting because you play the harp, which is like one of the most, an instrument that makes such beautiful and soothing music. It's like a mellifluous sort of, you know, I don't think you could have used piano music for this film. Like the harp and the strings are perfect. What was that like putting a soundtrack together? You said your husband took the lead, but did you both work on it together?
So we used a lot of the music that we've created together over the years. And then we also used a lot of the music that my daughter's band has created over the years, some of which they've all recorded here in our studio. So we used the music we already had as a base, and then that to create, you know, choral structure and use the instruments for that. But I think you're right. I think the harp, especially he came to me with the very ending moment of it, is a harp piece that he composed, actually. I think my husband's a guitarist. He plays 6-string and 12-string. And I love the way that that's impacted the harp music that I'm making now. Because when I played alone, I was playing classical or Celtic stuff. And I think a lot of times the harp sounds like the harp. You expect the Nutcracker or something.
Yeah.
You know, it's these runs. It's the magic in every movie. But he approaches the harp more like a blues guitarist. And so he's able to coax out different sounds from it that I wouldn't. So I think that's one of the great things about working with someone who comes from a totally different perspective.
It's interesting. And there's a point where you guys talk about meshing the sound of the two instruments. And the guitar It's more bluesy or gritty, I want to say, or it's definitely more noticed, not obnoxious, but it's like you can't ignore the guitar. And I love the guitar, but it is different than the harp. And the way you guys bring it together, I thought was great. You described the music you guys make as, where is that? Baroque, folk rich, with hints of Appalachian balladry, Delta blues, and echoes of English folk. Where is that music being played in America? Like when you get in the big blue bus with the whole family, what kind of venues are you playing? Like outdoor festivals? That's just so unique.
Yeah, we've played a lot of different venues. We've played outdoor festivals. We've played, we played theaters. We play libraries a lot of the time when we tour in the summer because we played museums. We played in the museum in Manitowoc actually a couple years ago.
Nice.
So. Yeah, we've toured along the coast of the Inner Sea quite a bit in the past couple of years, along all the Great Lakes, because we've been doing these kind of Great Lakes sea songs. So we did a project of the shanties and sea songs specifically of the sailing era on the Great Lakes. But we love, there's a lot of, we do house concerts, we do outdoor festivals, we've done libraries because our kids love to stop in the middle of the day and go read books in a library while we're playing. So that's been a great fit for us.
You have, can you talk a little bit about, like, you talk about the shores of Lake Michigan, and you have a lot of, it provides a lot of very soothing sound in addition to the music, are the waves and water. And there are scenes where you're standing there pregnant or walking pregnant, and you have this water. Was there a parallel, or was that intentional to draw a parallel to your pregnancy in any way?
Yeah, so when we decided, I mean, my initial idea going into it was thinking about that moment, you know, the summer after I had placed my daughter for adoption when I was 21, when I was in Sheboygan and I would walk down to the lake every night and just stand on the edge of the lake and watch the moon rise and wonder whether I was going to survive the pain that I was feeling. I just was in so much pain. This was, you know, my daughter was a month old and I couldn't imagine what the future would hold. And I felt like the lake was so beautiful that it kind of gave me a path of, you know, believing that that beauty and that trail of moonlight could lead towards something good. And then years later, after, you know, my daughter had grown up and I had had many children of my own, and we were touring and we were in the big blue bus and we pulled up next to one of the, we were actually on the shores of Lake Erie. And I walked down to the water and I realized that I was standing on the other side of the lake. I just had this sense of the way that the journey had arced around and brought me to this further shore. So that was the idea I had going into the movie, was kind of giving a sense of this long-term story, which of course is not finished. It's a story that's still being made. But the lakes were always a huge part of that for me as a metaphor. And then I did not plan to be pregnant at all in that shot, which I love that shot. We had this amazing cinematographer along with us. He came with us for a 2-week tour around the lakes doing a concert tour. And I had no idea when I hired him to come that I was going to be pregnant, but I think it ended up adding, you know, that I was pregnant with my sixth child while telling the story of the sixth child that my husband and I have. So my seventh child, but I was telling the story about my first. So it was, again, kind of like a long form story.
Yeah. My guest is Kate Stapleton. She made the film The Inner Sea, and it makes its world premiere at the Northern Sky Gould Theater in Fish Creek at the Door County Film Festival, February 15th, just a few weeks. So get your tickets. Where can people get tickets, Kate, if they want to check this out or for any of the films at the Door County Film Festival?
I believe so. The Door County Film Festival has a website and a Facebook page. So if you check out their Facebook page, it's got all the information about how to purchase tickets and also on their website. So Google Door County Film Festival, and I know they're selling tickets now. I know they sold out last year, so definitely get your tickets now.
Such a beautiful area for a film festival. Can you talk about a little bit about the significance of the title, The Inner Sea? And you use the word sea, like S-E-A, but it's the Great Lakes. Does that have some correlation to the pregnancy or just your inner thoughts? Where does the title come from?
Yeah, I mean, while we were doing a lot of the research on the historical songs of the Great Lakes, we were looking at, you know, the seafaring nature of them. So technically, they are inner. You don't actually have to be saltwater to be a sea, like S-E-A. And they have, you know, there's ocean going vessels on them. I think that people don't realize who aren't near the Great Lakes what massive seas of water they are. But for me, it was also, yeah, I think an interior journey. And also, you know, when we're pregnant, you have, you're holding a child within this inner sea, you know, yeah, in salt water. So there were kind of spirals, I feel like, that led me to that title.
All right. What were you hoping to accomplish? Like when you set out to do this, Kate, you have this idea, your husband pushed you into it, you directed it and produced it, and you have this great story to tell. What were you hoping came out of this and did it?
I think that one huge thing that came out of it for me was the cinematographer was on the tour bus with us the first year when he was filming, and he looked at me and said, you know, how did you survive your grief? And I felt like I didn't have an answer for him. And I think that this movie, the work of creating this movie helped me to understand that. And so much of it was through the beauty of, through music and through art and through like a great openness. Just that was really helpful for me. But I also would love to open the conversation about adoption. I mean, I think it's not well understood. I don't think that women who place children for adoption have a voice. I've always been very aware of that. No, it's a secret thing. No one knows it happened. There's nothing to mark you to say that this happened to you. So I think that introducing that voice into the world and bringing that conversation is really something that's really important to me.
Kate, good luck with the film. Knock 'em dead in Door County. I hope it goes over well, and very excited to catch up with you down the road and hear your music. But very interesting story, and best of luck with it.
Thank you so much. Thanks
You're
for
welcome.
Having me.
Thanks for joining us. All right, that's Kate Stapleton. Check out the Door County Film Festival website, Google it, and look for The Inner Sea. It's a good film. I watched it today, and it's very poignant. All right, when we come back, we're going to wrap this up and talk a little bit about the Oscar nominations. That's next on Nightlight with Pete Schwabba on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
We got a text from Cam. It's like, looks like an animation cell or something. He just says, I live in squalor. I'm sorry to hear that, Cam. Thank you for texting, though. Bridget from the 818 says, I think $10. This is in response to our question of the night, which is, at which point, if you haven't already, would you finally cancel Netflix? And tell us what you're willing to pay for streaming services or when you would cancel it. Bridget says, I think $10 is reasonable. It all adds up quickly. It certainly does. And there are a number of streaming services that are still available for under $10. I think Peacock, I want to say Paramount and maybe Apple TV. What is Apple TV?
Apple
like?
TV
$7.99 or something like that.
No, I believe it's $10.
Oh, it went
and
up then.
I think if it goes up again, I'd cancel it too because there's some good stuff on there, but there's not a lot.
Yeah, I know. It's like they have 7,000 shows and like four you want to watch, and it's like, is it worth? But you know, if you could get on a schedule where, like this month, I'll get Netflix and Apple, and I'm going to watch everything on those two. I'll cancel them, and the next month, I'll get something else. So you're only paying like $30 a month, but you're getting different streaming services per month. And you can do that. Like there was a game on this year I wanted to watch. I got the NFL Network for 1 month. I paid $15 to watch one game, and it was worth it because in a bar, I would have gone and spent $30 or $40. But you have to, it's hard to keep track of all that stuff. I'm not really typically that organized of a person to do that, but that is an option. Steady Eddie says, Pete, popcorn pick of the week. Have to put Argo on my list of movies to see. You absolutely should, Steady Eddie. And he says, is popcorn a miracle or what? Pete, did you know that Georgia O'Keeffe was born and grew up in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin? Yes. I did know that. I'd forgotten it, Steady Eddie, but Frank Anderson has talked about that before on this show. Thank you for the reminder. He says, I wish I could drink pop from a bubbler. See what he did there, Conrad?
I do.
A couple Wisconsin terms, combine them into one. He says, imagine a cigar 9 miles long. I don't know where he was going with that one. 9 miles long. It would take you a lifetime to smoke. Now imagine me doing the Trump weave dance to YMCA, and that's what it's all about. Good night, Nightlight. Good night, Steady Eddie. Thank you for the text, buddy. Yeah, that one, that's great. So I don't know, like these Oscar nominations, we only have a couple minutes. It was such a fun show, and Greg was such a fun guest that I didn't want to we could always talk about this tomorrow, but how many of these have you seen, Conrad?
I've seen half of Wicked. I didn't get through it, to be honest.
Because you didn't like it or just because you got distracted?
I don't know. I just feel like it didn't interest me as much as I thought it would.
Yeah.
You know, was Gladiator 2 in that mix? Cause
no.
No, okay.
It might have been nominated for something, but not. Best Picture is Emilia Perez, 13 nominations. And I'm going to see this probably. This will probably be one of the movies I get to the quickest because it's a musical that tells the story of a drug kingpin dealing with gender-affirming issues. I find that fascinating. 13 nominations. In second place, Brutalist with 10 and Wicked with 10. Conclave and A Complete Unknown also drew 8 nominations. Rounding out the nominees in the Best Picture category were independent films. Nickel Boys, Anora, The Substance, which I'm kind of scared to watch. Like those pictures of Demi Moore and what The Substance supposedly does to, and it just creeped me out big time, but I will muscle through it. And then the film I'm Still Here and Dune 2 also got a Best Picture award. So you saw that one, right?
I still haven't seen
Dune
2.
Oh, you haven't seen Dune 2?
No. Okay. It gets to a point where I'm like, I don't know if I want to spend this much time watching a movie. I don't know. It's very long.
It is a long film. I did like it. I didn't love it as much as some people. I thought the end kind of, I don't know. It just didn't, it closed strong, but it was over the top compared to the rest of the movie. I guess. So I don't know. I'm not a big Dune fan though. I watched the first one with my son the night before, just so I wasn't lost during Dune 2. I thought it was okay. But I've seen Conclave. I have to see, I'll probably watch Emilia Perez soon. I really want to see The Complete Unknown in theaters. I'm going to see that on Saturday. And then the rest of these I can pretty much stream. Nickel Boys, I think, Anora. But some good films. And a variety. Like, you've got your blockbusters like Wicked and Dune 2. Then you've got indies like Anora, Nickel Boys, The Substance, I'm Still Here. And I did like Conclave. Emilia Perez sounds really interesting. 13 nominations. That's big. And I do want to see The Brutalist. It's not available to stream yet. I doubt it will come to the theater in Marinette. And it is about 12 hours long. So I'll have to pace myself and pack a lunch. But we can talk about, we'll break down some of the best actors and actresses tomorrow, supporting categories, and of course, best sound. We got to talk about that. I bet Dune 2 is up for best sound because that film closed. It had like this really big closing to the point where I noticed the sound. And I remember thinking this is going to be nominated for best sound, a category I've never really paid any attention to. But some good nominees, and there's a lot in the acting categories too. We'll break that down tomorrow and talk about directors tomorrow. It is a bar band Friday night tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. Terry Barr will be here, and we will talk to Kim Shevchik from the Doctors in Recital. And I'm trying to get my buddy Jackie Flynn on the show, who's performing at the Kenosha Comedy Club. He's a Boston comic, hilarious. If you're in Kenosha, go see it. But we'll talk about that tomorrow. What else, Conrad? What am I forgetting?
I don't think anything.
We got it. All right, Texters, thank you very much. And that's it. We'll do it all again tomorrow night. On behalf of the lovable producer, Conrad, I am Pete Schwabba on behalf of Nightlight. Good night, Wisconsin. I'll sing it to your best friend's house. Mama made, we're making out. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll sing it to your best friend's house. I loved you then and I love you.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.